lesson at this time, we are starting the fifth chapter of Joshua. In this chapter, we have what happened immediately after the people had all gotten over the Jordan River. We have an account of the circumcision ordinance being reinstituted and practiced, and also then the keeping of the Passover. Beginning with the first verse, "And it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites which were on the side of the Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanite which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel, until we were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them any more because of the children of Israel." Now this verse tells about the great concern and actually the terror that was struck into the hearts of the kings in the land of Canaan. He talks about the kings of the Amorites and also then the kings of the Canaanites, which were over by the sea. As long as this encampment of the children of Israel were over on the east side of the Jordan, at least the kings could have felt that they had a little bit of security because they had this raging Jordan River that was a barrier between them and the invading Israelites. But now that God had miraculously stopped the waters of the Jordan River and let his people pass over safely, every one of them had clean passed over, then this last great barrier that was their protection, their natural defense, had been removed. And so we can see then the word passing swiftly from messenger and from mouth to mouth as the news spreads across the land that this mighty encampment of the Israelites had gotten over the Jordan River. Had it been another season when the Jordan was about dried up and it looked like it was going to be an easy crossing, these kings might have had all their armies arrayed on their side of the Jordan River to try to prevent a crossing. But this caught them by surprise. They were not expecting at this time of the year and in the difficult condition that river was in for this people to be able to get across. But they underestimated, of course, the God of heaven. And the fact that it had happened let them know that this people had a God that was the true God. Their God had power. Their God could perform. It wasn't just a matter of a lot of superstitious belief, but this people had a God that was an all-powerful and all-wise God. So as they describe this, it says that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them anymore because of the children of Israel. This was a mighty army that had here crossed over the Jordan River, this army of the Israelites. And so these kings were put into a position that their heart melted. That is, they were afraid. They didn't have any feeling that they even could be victorious. They were up against an insurmountable foe in these people of God. And he says, neither was their spirit in them anymore. Now God had said that he was going to put his fear before the children of Israel, and certainly it did. These kings were in a state of terror. They were in a state of fear. They had no more spirit, had no more will, no zeal to defend themselves against this people. So we see then how God can work several ways to bring about his will. Not only can he give his people the strength and the fortitude and the ability to carry it out, but he can also weaken the resistance. He can make a person or a group of people's heart to fail, to faint, to melt. He can cause them to lose their spirit. He can cause them to lose their fight. And that's exactly what he did here. So let us not ever underestimate our God, his power, his ability, his ingenuity when it comes to helping his people. And one of the ways that he helped his people here, as we're going to see a little bit later, that needed help at this time, was to cause all this great fear in the hearts of the kings. Verse 2, "At that time the Lord said unto Joshua, Make thee sharp knives, and circumcise again the children of Israel the second time." Now this is a very interesting situation we find here. During the sojourn of 40 years in the wilderness, the males who were born were not circumcised. The rite of circumcision had been done away with during that time. It was not practiced. And it's difficult for us to be able to maybe answer all the questions as to exactly why it wasn't practiced, why this, one of the greatest of all rites that God had given his people during this time, why that it ceased to be done. But as we look at it, we can come up with some ideas that probably are related to the reason that this wasn't practiced. In Genesis 17, beginning with the 7th verse and going through the 14th verse, let's note what is said here about the circumcision. God is talking to Abraham, and he says, "And I will establish my covenant between thee and me, and thy seed after thee, in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee, and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee, and to thy seed after thee, the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said unto Abraham, Thou shalt keep my covenant therefore, thou and thy seed after thee in their generations. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you, and thy seed after thee. Every man-child among you shall be circumcised. And ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. And he that is 8 years old shall be circumcised among you, every man-child in your generations. He that is born in the house, or bought with money of any stranger, which is not of thy seed, he that is born in thy house, and he that is bought with thy money, must needs be circumcised, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And the uncircumcised man, child, whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He hath broken my covenant." Now the covenant that he talks about here is spelled out in verse 8. He says, "I will give unto thee, and to thy seed after thee, the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for an everlasting possession. I will be their God." And that's what circumcision then was a token of, a sign of. What he calls here, "My covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant." This covenant that they were going to be given the land of Canaan, all the land to possess. Well, we see when the children of Israel then came into the wilderness area, they actually rebelled against God. God gave them opportunity to go into the land of Canaan, and they refused to go, and so they broke the covenant. They really were not living according to this covenant. God was ready for them to take the land, and they refused to take it. And so this could have been the reason why that God then stopped this ordinance of circumcision. Here this people had deemed themselves unworthy to go into the land. They had refused to go when the time came. He was going to let them die in this wilderness area. And so the ordinance of circumcision ceased to be practiced at this time. So in this second verse of Joshua, where he says, "Make thee sharp knives and circumcise again the children of Israel the second time," doesn't mean that he is again circumcising the same people who had already been circumcised, but speaking of the general body of the people, he is again instituting the practice of circumcision like it was originally instituted back in the time of Abraham. And so now we're starting the practice of circumcision again the second time. And these are people who had never been circumcised that are being circumcised at this time. Verse 3, "And Joshua made him sharp knives and circumcised the children of Israel at the heel of the foreskins." Now some of the Bible scholars interpret this phrase, "heel of the foreskins," to mean a name of the actual place where the circumcision was done. Verse 4, "And this is the cause why Joshua did circumcise all the people that came out of Egypt that were males, even all the men of war, died in the wilderness by the way after they came out of Egypt. Now all the people that came out were circumcised, but all the people that were born in the wilderness, by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt, them they had not circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness, till all the people that were men of war, which came out of Egypt, were consumed, because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord, unto whom the Lord sware that he would not show them the land, which the Lord sware unto their fathers, that he would give them, us, a land that floweth with milk and honey. So he just recounts in this passage the fact that because of their rebellion, God wouldn't let them enter into the land. They all had to die, and all those people were circumcised. But their offspring had not been circumcised. So now they were going to take the time out to do this. So it says in verse 7, and their children, whom he raised up in their stead, them Joshua circumcised. For they were uncircumcised, because they had not circumcised them by the way. Now when he says them Joshua circumcised, what it means is that the direction of Joshua, they were circumcised. Now remember, what they're simply doing here is renewing this practice that was a sign, that was a seal, that God was going to give them the land. And so when the people had refused to go into the land, this seal was taken away. It was no longer practiced. And now, as soon as they had crossed over the Jordan River, they again renewed this practice of circumcision. As we talk about circumcision, it's interesting to note what is said in the New Testament about circumcision. In Romans 2:29, the Apostle Paul says, beginning with verse 28, for he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and the circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God. So that our circumcision today is one that's performed in the heart. It's done by Christ. It is an inward thing and not an outward thing, not an outward display or an outward show. And as we stop to think about it, just as Joshua was a successor of Moses, and he then was the one to circumcise these people a second time, even so we have Jesus today who is leading us to the promised land, and he is the one who circumcises us today. And just as those children of Israel had not been circumcised outwardly while they were in the wilderness, even so today the church is a type of God's people still in the wilderness, waiting to cross over the river Jordan, that is death, into the true promised land, the true Canaan land. And just as they were not circumcised, even so today we are not outwardly circumcised during this church age. Again we read in Colossians 2, verse 11, in whom also you are circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, in putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, wherein also you are risen with him through the faith of the operation of God, who hath raised him from the dead. And you, being dead in your sins and the uncircumcision of your flesh, hath he quickened together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses. And we'll stop the reading at that point. But here he calls this, in this passage in Colossians 2 and 11, he calls this the circumcision of Christ. And so that's what we have today. We have the circumcision of Christ, a circumcision made without hands, and it's done inwardly in the heart, and so we are then made cleansed from our sins and have a renewing of this covenant with Christ today, whereas they had a covenant with God that they were going to get into the land of Canaan. So, verse 8 says, and it came to pass, when they had done circumcising all the people, that they abode in their places in the camp till they were whole. Now it took several days for them to heal properly after this circumcision. And after being circumcised here, they were in a particularly vulnerable condition. And one may say, well, this is not a very wise time to be circumcising the people. This is kind of an unwise act on the part of God to do this. But we see that God is using his wisdom, and he is causing the people to carry out what he wants at the time he wants it done as a test of their faith and to show that what he says is ultimately going to be what's going to work out for the best. Ordinarily, we would think they would have been circumcised while they were back over there in the plains of Moab. maybe even during the 30 days of mourning after the death of Moses, sometime when they were going to be in a relatively safe, secure condition and not have to be subjected to the rigors of possible attack or warfare. Here they just crossed over the river. They just invaded the enemy's territory. And the first thing they do is to be circumcised, which puts them in a physical condition where they're unable to properly fight. And this is proof again then that God is with them. God is going to allow them to be safe. And so they stay in this place until they were whole. That is, till they had a chance to heal. Verse 9, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, This day have I rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off you. Wherefore the name of the place is called Gilgal unto this day." Now here God is talking about rolling away the reproach of Egypt. They had been a people that were really not a people. They were slaves. They weren't truly a nation. And God had taken this group of slaves who were not a nation. He'd brought them out, and he'd promised them that he was going to give them a land. He was going to make them a mighty nation. And, of course, he did that very thing. But until that was accomplished, they still had the reproach of Egypt. They still were really a nation without a land, a nation without a true government, a nation that really wasn't functioning as a nation. And so they had this reproach of Egypt. And here he said, "This day have I rolled away the reproach of Egypt." They now were keeping the laws of God. They were again circumcised and had renewed this covenant that this land would be theirs. And there was a rolling away done of this reproach of Egypt. And so the name of this place is called Gilgal. He says Gilgal unto this day. And the word for Gilgal is a word that means a wheel or a rolling or turning, a circle. And by saying this syllable twice, Gilgal, it indicates a turning or a rolling. And so that's the reason this place was named that, because it signified the rolling away of the reproach of Egypt from off you. Now this place of Gilgal is located about 6 1/4 miles from the Jordan River and about 1 1/4 miles from the city of Jericho. So they were very close to the city of Jericho. When they were at the place of Gilgal. And you can see that they were in a relatively vulnerable position. However, God had done this on purpose, I'm sure, so that the people would have to rely upon him with a true and unabiding faith. So being this close to Jericho, you can see how that it required the utmost of dependence upon God to put themselves in this most vulnerable condition of having all the males circumcised and being in an unhealed state for a while, unable to actually defend themselves, unable to do battle until they'd had enough days then to become whole again. And just as this act of circumcision reminded them of the covenant that they had with God, let us not forget that we today, living in the Christian age, in the age of the Messiah, we also have a covenant with God. Our covenant is a new covenant from the one that they had at that time. In Jeremiah 31:31, he says, "Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law in their inward parts, and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more." So the covenant we have today is not written on tables of stone. It is written on our inward parts. And the circumcision we have today, as we read in Romans 2:28, "For he is not a Jew which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew which is one inwardly, and the circumcision is that of the heart in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God." Again in Hebrews 8, beginning with verse 7, "For if the first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. For finding fault with them, he saith, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Judah and with the house of Israel, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their mind, and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least to the greatest. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. In that he saith a new covenant, he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. So there again in Hebrews, he verifies the fact that we're now under this new covenant. It's one that's in the inward man. It's written in the heart. It's not in tables of stone. Our circumcision today is a circumcision of the heart of the inward man and not an outward show or outward display as they had here in the days of Joshua. And just as the keeping of this covenant was a very solemn thing to these people, the keeping of our covenant today, a covenant given by the same God, is equally as solemn to us. That concludes our lesson at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, Goodbye, friends.